Good morning. Thank you for joining us on 10:30 on the AM dial on the Bustos Media Network. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. And with me, as always, behind the glass, keeping me on time and on target, is Matt Neely.
Morning, Ted.
Morning, Matt. So today's the beginning of the services and everything for Representative Grijalva, and it looks like it's going to be a busy couple days. I know they've had some moments of silence back in Congress, and I've now read that Speaker Johnson and many congressional members are going to actually come out for the services. Yep. There's a rosary tonight from 4 to 5:30 at St. John's Catholic Church on Ajo Way. And then the funeral services are tomorrow, but they are now advertising them as closed to the public because there's going to be so many, both elected officials, dignitaries. I mean, as you could only imagine, I mean, whether people agreed or didn't agree with Representative Grijalva's opinions from the time he started his service on the Tucson School Board through his service as a member of the Board of Supervisors and then 11 terms over 22 years in Congress, he was a public servant. And he gave a lot of his life to try to make things better for his community and for the people and the political beliefs that he had. So I think we've got to make sure that we recognize that honor. And these next couple of days are going to be hard for the family, for all the friends that he's got in this region. And those of us who have worked in it have some incredible stories, you know, that of times. I remember a couple times specifically that I had an opportunity to talk with him. And as probably most people can guess, we didn't always align on the political spectrum. It wasn't that way. But one of my favorite stories is when we went back to D.C., it was a Southern Arizona Leadership Council, a Tucson Metro Chamber, and a Southern Arizona Defense Alliance trip back. So we were split. We were going all different ways. We were sending some people went to meet with Andy Biggs, others went. And there was a bill, and the irony of it is I can't really remember what it was, but there was some floor in the action that we're really worried about. And about five of us went in and talked with the congressman. And if you've ever been to his office, it is full of tchotchkes. You know, there was carpets and hangings that were covering the windows. I mean, it was his place. He had made it, and we were sitting talking, and we got on the point of this bill or this issue that we were worried about, and finally he just looked at me, leaned over, and put his hand on, you know, tapped me on the leg, and says, "Ted, don't worry, your bill's gonna pass. I'm not voting for it, but don't worry, your bill's gonna pass." And I just, you know, I appreciated the honesty. One of the things I found interesting was the guard base. You know, about 1,700 airmen work down there on Tucson Airport Authority.
Yep.
That was in Congressman Grijalva's district. I think in the 13 years there, he came and met with us once, and I'll talk about that in a second. But he always turned the responsibility for that unit and the advocacy for that unit over to whoever was in CD2 or CD6. Hmm. So Gabby Giffords was a huge advocate when she was representing CD6 or CD2 in Congress. And Representative Grijalva was fine with that. He was good with it. He was... I look at it sometimes when there were issues that he didn't agree with, he was going to do no harm on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
He was a huge advocate for natural resources, for sure. Indigenous, the tribes, huge advocate. And that's where he made his mark. If you read, you know, the articles in the paper now are going to talk about all that he's done on natural resources and protecting the Grand Canyon and protecting the tribal lands. But on a lot of the other issues, he wouldn't go out of his way to do harm. I appreciated that about him. He did not, you know, he wasn't a big fan of the military. That just wasn't one of the things, you know, he felt the need he needed to support. But he wouldn't go out of his way to make life difficult for those of us that served or for the military.
Interesting perspective.
And I always appreciated it. And the one time that he did come in and sat down, I was the vice commander at the time. Mick McGuire was the wing commander. He came in and sat down us. He was way no more knowledgeable on our mission and what we had going on than I ever would have imagined.
Mm.
that I ever would have imagined. And I was really, that impressed me in a lot of ways. You always hear about, you know, members of Congress that sometimes they aren't really all in tune to everything. But in that case, I said, okay, he knows more about, even if it had just been something he had crammed on, he wanted to make sure when he came in, mm-hmm. we understood that he was aware of our issues. So from that front, you know, I think it's the next couple days, like I said, are going to be hard for a lot of folks in this community. And there's already a lot of conversation of what's next, you know.
Yeah.
Who's going to go in? Daniel Hernandez.
Some of that news has trickled into the headlines today. Yes,
as you announced, he's already announced he's starting his outreach and his fundraising. Huge rumors about Adrian Fontes.
Uh-huh.
You know, a couple weeks ago, I would have thought he maybe was testing the waters like he kind of did with running against Katie Hobbs for governor. But met with some folks from the Phoenix area, and they said his talk's serious. He really wants to come down here. He grew up down here. He lived down here. He believes that this area has been not as benefiting by as much in the growth of Arizona as it should.
Mm-hmm.
Because of where the money's going. And so if he enters it, and while I fully honor and believe what Adelita Grijalva is doing and putting out there that she's not going to make any announcement until after the services are done, and I think that's the proper thing to do for the family. Boy, the rumors around there have turned from maybe, you know, will it be Mayor Romero or Supervisor Grijalva? It's looking pretty solid. And with the event that... the Bernie Sanders AOC event that she got up and spoke at this weekend sure made it sound.
Certainly seemed to send a message.
like she's going to be in it. So that's going to be a race that could end up being very interesting. A couple Republicans have already announced that they've run. There's more Democrats in those three that have said they're running. We'll see what comes out when it gets down to it. You know, people see opportunities and throw their names in a lot, but there's probably going to be a Republican candidate on the final ballot against whoever wins the Democratic bet. But that district, whether people want to acknowledge it or not, is going to be blue. It's the numbers.
Voting right acts district. It's
almost a plus 40 difference between the number of,
just like, know, a couple of the districts in Arizona are always going to be red.
Right.
That's
the way they drew the nine congressional districts. There's really only two
mm-hmm.
that are competitive. Juan Ciscomani's and David Schweikert's.
Yep.
And that's it.
So it turns out, yes.
And they're both held right now by ours, but I think it's going to be a really interesting primary if all three of those folks get in, because they're all relatively well-known names. And it's really, I think, the two other challengers are challenging what sometimes is referred to as the Grijalva machine when it comes to their ability to get out the vote.
They are effective at it.
And they're good effective. At it.
And just, I know we're going to probably move on to other things, but while we're still sort of on the subject, similar to, I guess, an experience you had, I was at an event, a function here in town, and Congressman Grijalva was one of the speakers. And so he gets up and they introduce him, and it was at a credit union event. And it's something that I've been very passionate about all my life. You know, something. And then through that, you know, you can get involved politically with the Hike the Hill stuff, where you go visit the congresspeople and you tell the story of credit unions, keep it front of mind. You know, all industries have it, and then radio has it, and broadcasting has it, and, you know, the firearms folks have it, the gun rights people. Well, anyway, so he gets up and speaks, and I very quickly realized that and this is at the time when I was maybe the most politically active in my life in terms of working for campaigns and candidates and things like this, right? And so he gets up and he starts talking about why he supports credit unions. And I realized very quickly that while I may not agree with him on a lot of issues, we're in lockstep for the same reasons, by the way, how they give consumers a choice. And, you know, it's healthy competition for the banks, and it gives people, you know, a low cost alternative to all these great services. And so he gets up there. So it was just kind of interesting. You know, you do find issues. You can find issues with anybody that you agree with. Right. And so, and he was a big supporter of the credit union industry. So good on him for that. Yeah.
It just goes to show, Matt, that there's no doubt we like to focus in our life, especially, you know, on radio shows and on television and in the news, on the differences.
Sure. we could spend the rest of the hour talking about why we disagreed with him on a lot of other issues. But
right.
Anyway, it was just one of those things. It's like, wow, this is somebody who I'm diametrically opposed with on practically every other issue, you know, many of the other issues. But there's something that you can find common ground with people.
Absolutely. And Matt, on that one, why don't we go to a break? When we come back, we will talk a little bit about some activity up the state legislature that I think the listeners might find interest in. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to bring in House Majority Leader, Representative Michael Carbone, to talk to us about the state legislature as well. So on that note, appreciate the conversation this morning, Matt, and rest in peace, Congressman. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, and Matt Neely and I are alone in the studio right now. And the audience is going to get another 15 minutes with us.
Hey!
At the bottom of the hour, we'll be bringing on Representative Michael Carbone. He is the House Majority Leader who represents District 25, which runs all the way from Buckeye and Surprise all the way out to Yuma. So it's a pretty large district. He serves as the second leader for the majority party in the House. He works directly for the Speaker, and he's going to join us and talk about some of the things there as part of our continuation of the engagement hour, learning about why folks are getting involved. But Matt, right now I really want to just kind of talk about some action that happened yesterday at the state legislature that could make Pima County the only county in the state that is going to be actively trying to help the folks that are facing addiction get out of addiction when they are in trouble and it's taking their life down in a lot of ways. And this is it originally started, I think, as a controversial bill, and it worked its way through the Senate on partisan terms, and it's even had a Republican that voted no, but it just got its first vote from a couple Democrats, and I'm going to kind of talk about what it is. The bill is SB 1257. It is sponsored by Senator Vince Leach, and what it does is it allows Pima County, in this case, but it allows folks that are in the crisis response center for some kind of action with the police that the police have deemed they're under the influence or they're mentally ill, they go to the crisis response center. And the crisis response center can legally hold those individuals for 24 hours, or as we've been saying up there when we talk at the legislature, 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 59 seconds. And then at that point, if they're not getting charged or they're not getting anything, you have to release them. Now, Title 36 allows for a lawyer to go to court if somebody's mentally ill or suffering from some severe mental illness, and they can actually then get court order holding to try to treat the illness and the mental issues that the person's dealing with. The challenge has always been on the drug use side of the house, because you also go up there if you're under the influence, you know, alcohol, drugs, fentanyl, it doesn't matter. You go there, they hold you at the crisis response center, hope you sober up, and then they can offer you ways to help you get better or, in some cases, release. It's kind of the old story where you used to take the town drunk, you'd throw him in jail, and he'd sober up, and, you know, come on, you know, Joe, stop doing this, you know, and then they'd release him because at that point he's no longer a threat or a danger to himself or to the public. The challenge with narcotics is meth will stay in the system up to 5 days, definitely more than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And so what we see on these crisis response centers is, and again, it's not the police just picking up folks for drug use. That was one of the concerns they had, that there'd be random police sweeps of picking up homeless individuals or people that might have drug use and take them to the crisis response centers. It was going to be a way of doing those sweeps. That's not the intent. The intent is somebody who's in trouble with the law for something. So probably, you know, threw a rock through a window or graffiti or
stole somebody's wiring.
Sold somebody's wiring or being a public nuisance to people in the crowds.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
It's something that obviously their actions got the attention of the police. What this is going to allow is if they go to the crisis response center and prior to the 24-hour point, it's identified that they're on these narcotics. The goal is that still following due process, the individuals would be allowed to remain in the crisis response center for up to 5 days. During that time, the hope is they will have an opportunity to sober up, because what's somebody who's an addict or somebody on drugs going to want to do at the 24-hour point? They want to go get another high. We've lost the narcotics that got them there in the first place are not out of their system yet. And there's some, they're not in a right state of mind to make that decision. So Vince Leach agreed to take and carry this bill. A bill that was way more aggressive was run last year. Run last year by the same groups. And a lot of it came from the Crime-Free Coalition. I'm going to give them a ton of credit on this bill itself, because they've been working incredibly hard to try to get a bill after last year's failure, because it was an overreach, to find a bill that would work. So one of the first things that the Crime-Free Coalition did, and I particularly want to highlight Josh Jacobson and Kevin Daly, they reached out to the county and said, tell us why this is a bad idea. And you know what the county did? They said it's not. So Sylvia Lee, who was serving as a Board of Supervisor member then, and in conjunction with Jan Lesher and some of the staff, worked with the Crime-Free Coalition to build the bill that it had. Then they came to SCLC and said, you guys work in this field. Do you want to take a look? And we convened a meeting with Senator Leach. And through that work, the initial bill was crafted. It was, I would say it was rough to say anything. And it's gone through numerous modifications. Initially, it was not intended to be Pima County only. But it got through the Senate. A couple modifications. Senator Leach has been doing a phenomenal job. Several of us went up. Kevin Daly has now testified up at the state legislature 3 or 4 times for this bill. I've spoken, Nicole Braza, our vice president, she went up yesterday because I was unable to go, and she spoke to the House Health and Human Services Committee that was hearing the bill. And it was very interesting because a lot of times you already know the votes are baked in. Mm-hmm. And in the Senate, it was straight party line. And Senator Hoffman voted no on the floor for his reasons, because some of the challenge, even in the conservative side of the Republican Party, is, well, this is an overreach. This has given our government too much control.
Sure. You could see that reaction.
It's called involuntary stabilization.
Yeah, yep.
The person wants to go back out on the street, but we have...
Somebody with a libertarian bent would probably be... would kind of bristle it.
But here's the challenge. We're not going to put them in jail.
Right.
So guess they become what was referred to as frequent flyers. They're in the crisis response center, held for 24 hours, let back to the streets. You see them again a week later, 2 weeks, the next time they get themselves in trouble. But they are coming back. And we're... For me, on the human dignity side of it, we're not doing anything to help these people. You know, we look at the homeless a lot, and we say, you always hear somebody say, well, some of them just like that lifestyle. Yeah, not the majority of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have come to the point in our society where we're accepting, I mean, we've already accepted open, visible, illegal narcotic use on
Absolutely.
The streets. And if we're accepting that kind of lifestyle, living on heavy use of narcotics, to what I'd say is numb the pain, that does not make any sense to me that in any ways that is compassionate or caring.
Mm-hmm.
This will give people an opportunity. This will get people an opportunity to sober enough that they could say, you know what, I don't want to live this lifestyle again.
Mm-hmm.
Because until they get off the narcotics, they're going to be frequent flyers and repeat offenders.
Right.
That's just how
it's
works.
The whole cycle.
I haven't seen a lot of people that use fentanyl at their homes recreationally. It's one of those drugs that becomes an addiction.
Right. You don't have the function, like the equivalent of a functional alcoholic with some of these hard drugs.
Correct.
Just don't.
It just doesn't exist. So the bill's been modified. The biggest change is it passed out yesterday out of that House Health and Human Services on an 8-3, one absent vote. It was, the reason that was important, it's the first time there had ever been a Democrat that voted for it.
Yeah, that's a big step. And, you know, part of that is probably attributable to getting buy-in from some county officials on this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Jan Lesher's been supportive. They're speaking up. You know, like I said, Sylvia Lee's actually testified up there. And it was pretty important to note pardon me, the only two Democrats that voted yes were Pima County Democrats.
Yeah.
Alma Hernandez and Chris Mathis.
Well, good for them.
And the argument taken by those who voted no is, oh, it's an overreach. The ACLU's against it. The Lawyers for Justice are against it. Because, and their arguments have changed, as we've seen, from hearing to hearing to hearing. When it doesn't work at one hearing, you change it for the next hearing. And they've gone even harder and harder on the fact that there's not enough specific detail. So the floor amendment's going to make this a trial. So there will be an end date. And it's going to be a trial only applicable in Pima County. So it's going to give us the opportunity to deal with an issue that I think people are passionate and caring about. You know, the fentanyl use has hit every county, but not in the same level and not in the same manner and not being treated the same by the attorneys of all those different counties either. Because as everybody believes, County Attorney Conover's got a number of rules that she is when it comes to if she's going to prosecute fentanyl use. It's not happening. But I want to compliment Vince Leach. Kevin Daley's been a workhorse on this. The county, if you're aware, SB 1257, hopefully it will make a difference. And with that, we'll be back right after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass. And I'm going to jump right into it because the Arizona House Majority Leader, Michael Carbone, has been on the phone waiting. I probably told him, hey, 8:30, great time to call in. And then we said, we're right in a break. So, Majority Leader Carbone, appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, no, glad to be here. Good morning.
Well, sir, I greatly appreciated the opportunity to meet with you last week, and I appreciate you being willing to come so quickly on the radio with me. It was a great conversation, and part of my show is we call it the Engagement Hour, and it's because we want to talk about the folks who have stepped forward, and I'm encouraging others to get involved, and I'd like to tell everybody a lot about your background, but I'd prefer that you do it, because it's kind of telling your story, and I think you know the highlights. So can you kind of just tell the listeners what brought you to Arizona and what got you involved in politics and why you decided to run several years ago for the Arizona House of Representatives?
Yeah, no. Yeah, thank you. Well, let's see. I moved here 11 years ago from Illinois and, you know, born and raised out there. And, you know, and my background, you know, outside of growing up and going to school and college, I was in real estate, construction, and finance pretty much. Was a business owner going all the way up till the market crashed, and then kind of had to shift gears but readapted and evolved. But the thing that changed us, my wife and I, we were just getting really tired. My kids were growing up, and my oldest, who was a senior at the time, and I said to my wife, I go, where'd all the time go? And she said, all you do is work. And so I part of life is a quality of life. And so we started searching where we could go and look for that. And also for our kids, my kids, I have four of them and one grandchild now here in Arizona, was to find something that was an opportunity for my kids. The jobs back in Illinois were going away. They're just not good jobs anymore. And we're like, well, they're all going to go to college and they're probably going to move away somewhere. So let's find a state that's friendly and has good jobs. So that's how we got out this way. We took about a 3-year search of across the country and discovered Arizona, and we're so thankful to be here because it is a great state. It's a beautiful state. It's got great freedom, liberties, and you know, the things that people are all moving here for. And frankly, this morning I'm seeing how there's this exodus of California, Illinois, New York, all these, you know, Michigan, Minnesota. I mean, there's all these states that are talking about the congressional races, how they're shifting, or congressional positions, how those states are losing based on population loss. So that's kind of my quick nut how I got out here. How I got into politics, I'll be honest, you know, when I was a kid going back to the 80s, I was a Reagan young little kid, third grade. I'll tell you my Reagan story. I was a Boy Scout, and we had a cook-off, or you had to bake a cake. So I baked a cake with a whole bunch of jelly beans all around it. And so I'll never forget it that day. I won the award, and I remember the gentleman saying, "Ronald Reagan would be so proud of this cake." And it just shows you my beginnings, my roots of that. And so as I moved forward, I became a young Republican at 18 and moved forward and got into politics in the late 90s in college, and then got on the school board in 08. And that really is what changed my life around becoming a big advocate for school choice. Hence where I am today. I moved to Arizona to get out of politics because outside of my company, I was very heavily involved in the Illinois-Chicago politics. And so I decided to run here because one of the first that was in my district, who I helped, who a good friend of mine. But he voted. He was the one vote, the Republican vote against school choice. So people have been asking me already for about a year. And so I decided to run, and because I love this state, we need good people that are practical, but also can be conservative in my right and get things done, which I've demonstrated at the first 2 years. Hence why now I'm a majority leader of the state of Arizona, which I'm just humbled and honored that my members have chosen me to do that. It's a big task, and you know, and just it shows kind of a very probably 5 minute journey. Where I've come from and where I'm at today. I think I've answered all your questions.
Oh, Majority Leader Carbone. I'm just switched to probably Representative Carbone. It makes it easier than Majority Leader. It's so easy to call the speaker.
By all means, call me.
So easy to call the speaker. The Majority Leader is a little bit more of a mouthful. Yeah. But one, I'm glad to hear that you're a Reagan was so influential in your life. Next time you're down in Tucson, hopefully I'll bring you by the SLC office. So I've got a picture of my graduation from the Air Force Academy. I got the opportunity to shake President Reagan's hand, a great photo, and through some connections, actually reconnected with him later because of a couple comments I made to him as I was on stage. But that's a whole nother story. What I want to hear about now is Chicago politics, totally different mindset. Now that you've been in the Arizona politics and you've seen the ability both to stand up and serve, and now you're the majority leader, this year you and Speaker Montenegro and all the majority leadership inside the House have focused on changing the philosophy of the Arizona House of Representatives. And can you kind of talk to what led to that, to include, talk a little bit about your majority plan 2025?
Yeah, I'll start with just our philosophy. First of all, culture. I also in since I've been in Arizona, I get hired to come in into organizations, agencies, to change culture and clean things up, fix them. And so when we and the speaker and leadership got together, he had his vision, I had some ideas, and he wants to bring back to the institution the decorum and the respect that it solely deserves. Not that it's been a lack of that, but based on how people are sitting at their seats, just little things that we've taken and tweaked and just the presence of managing the floor in a different way, and how we manage, there's so much there behind the scenes on the day-to-day operations. That's what really my role is the operational side. You got to make the clock turn, right? And so it's just, there's a lot of work behind it. And then there's the management of the members on my side, the caucus. And so, but now let's shift into the majority plan. Again, we wanted to change something different. We wanted to just raise the bar very high. As I was always call it in my world, is top shelf. I like to do things top shelf, as Frank Sinatra say, my way. Right. And so we started with this book, which is a member-driven majority plan. Every cycle, the majority will put together a plan. And this, and everyone has their own way of doing it. But what I started out with was we went to all the members and asked them, what's important to you in your district? What got you to be here today? What allowed you to get your constituency to vote for you? What are those top priorities? So we took all that, compiled it, put together a book. It's a beautiful book. We've been handing it out across the state. We just ran out again. We got to order another batch of them. But it focuses on three things, which is the three P's, and that's preserving the American dream, protecting our public safety, and promoting individual rights and freedoms. And, you know, and that's really kind of just the gist of it. And then the thing that's really important in our book that I think what makes it different than others, outside of the how it's a good quality, you know, in as far as a marketing piece, but we put it in their statistics. We went and took those top priorities and said, what do Arizonans think? Republican, independent, and Democrat. And I think that's what's very important here to understand, because this is what drives our crafting of bills, which our members are now are doing, and we're doing a very good job of it, because we know where the Arizonans are. So those majority plan bills, there's about 132 of them that we've identified, and we'll see what we can get through to the governor, and she'll get to sign. But these are what Arizonans want, not Republicans, independent, Democrat. It's what our state wants, and by district, you know, compiled into this great book called The Majority Plan.
And that's the voice of Representative Michael Carbone, the majority leader of the Arizona House of Representatives. And Representative Carbone, I've got, obviously, met with you last week. You gave me a copy of the book. It is impressive. And I've got to also tell you that the focus on bringing back decorum has been critical. As a person who works in that environment, it's how you treat each other, and it's how you get things done. If the time is spent,
I think we just lost him, he'll give us a call back. Give us a second here. I think once
man, that's what happens. I guess I was paying too many compliments to him, and he decided that's enough. So why don't we go ahead right now then, Matt?
Yeah,
let's cut to break.
Yeah, okay.
And as soon as he comes back in, tell him we'll be able to go till the close to the end of the hour.
Got it. Okay. We shall
All
do
right.
That.
You've been listening to 10:30.
There he is. Okay.
10:30 The Voice, yeah. And we're going to go to break, and then we'll bring him back online. Welcome back, and I'm going to jump right back in with Representative Michael Carbone. Sorry we lost you there. I was joking. Maybe I was giving you too many compliments, how impressed I am by the majority plan, and you just said, I'm out.
Gosh, no, never.
No. We've got about 7 more minutes left. The time flies. It always does. I apologize for that. But where can people find the majority plan? Because to your point, it's very well written. It's got data that supports what's in the majority plan. And where can they find that if they want to take a look at it?
Yeah, and forgive me for not having this memorized, but I think azledge.gov, you can go there and you can see to that website. And there's a spot, I think it's a tab on the top where it'll say majority plan. You click on that. And that's just kind of the online version. But if you needed a book, we have them at the Capitol. Folks in your district, we always say reach out. That's kind of a hard thing depending on where you're at. But that's probably the best place to go up and then see it. I don't know where else to go.
Representative Carbone, here's what we'll do for you. I'm going to go get to that link. I'm going to post it on my socials as well as we may post it here in KVOI in the summary of our conversation today. But I know you've got a couple bills that you'd like to talk about too. And one of them that caught my interest, obviously there's one that you're doing for the veterans that is great as well. Mm-hmm. But let's, if you could talk a little bit about HB 2774. That's the small modular reactors.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. SMRs, I've been following this for years, been really talking about it, the legislation for the last 2 years. And this year we decided to put something, I got my staff, they did a brilliant job crafting this. And here's the thing, we've had stakeholder meetings with this process. We had everybody across the state here, even Tucson Electric, I believe, was there, or representative there. And we have the largest nuclear facility in the country at Palo Verde, which is actually in my district, coincidentally. And when I met with the corporate commissioners of the state, they said, no, they go across the country to talk about, you know, nuclear, and Arizona's on that in that conversation. So this has now put us on the map. It's been getting national attention. But what it does, the focus of this, Max, was to really focus on rural Arizona to help, because these are tax rich. And the key with these small modular reactors is to pair them up with data centers. They're, as you know, in the military, we've had SMRs for over 45 years here in our battleships, our subs, our now aircraft carriers. So this technology has been around for a long time, and it is safe.
Safe technology.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. Yes, you're absolutely right. And they're very low water usage, and some don't even use water. So, and the same thing goes for data. Data centers are not using water. some of them can use water, but you don't have to. There's they're called loop systems. But here's the thing: they're so tax rich, and if you can get that in rural Arizona, that's big dollars. And I hate to say it this way, but it's the fact of it: economic development to public safety, to schools, and those communities where they might not have a lot of jobs, and they are good paying jobs. They don't create a lot of jobs, but they create enough for a community in such as local or rural Arizona. And here's the thing that's even better. Right now, currently, we have four sites that are already available that could put these in there today if the regulation was allowable through Washington. So it's pretty fascinating. The first one that's being done is in Alberta, Canada right now. It's an SMR data, what they call co-location. I'll be traveling up there this summer to see it. They're the first on this continent that's doing it. And I want Arizona to lead in this. We should. We always lead in everything, and that's why I love this state so much.
Well, and I, Representative Carbone, that is, I appreciate your leadership on this one because we've been having this conversation for a long time. It also shortens the transmission lines, the transmission capability. It expands so much, particularly in those rural areas, and so many people don't understand how much nuclear power can contribute. It's one of the cleanest forms of energy. They only think about the broad accidents that they've seen in the past. And I really appreciate you taking the chance to put this forward and try to make some movement. So thank you for carrying that bill for us.
Absolutely. You're welcome. Thank you.
So the other one, I think our listeners would be really interested in is your 2448. You amended it, but that's the voting locations emergency designation and electioneering bill that you've run. Can you talk about that one a little bit? And this is probably going to be the close for the show, but appreciate you sharing this.
No, of course. Yeah. So this actually happened to me and some other members, and Tom, Superintendent Horn was another one. We were at polling stations this past year in August or July for the primary, what they call electioneering. That was me going there and promoting. I was actually promoting a gal in 23 called, her name is Representative Michelle Pena. And I'd been going across since 6 in the morning all day, going to different stations, helping the members. And so I'm here in Goodyear at this polling station, and three undercover detectives come out and say, I have to leave, that you're not allowed to electioneer. And I was just baffled. I go, that's our First Amendment right. What do you mean I can't election? I go, there's a little sign there that says I have to be 75 foot away from the polling station, which I was more than that. And they said, well, anyways, long story short, I had, different folks on the phone at the time. And I ended up leaving and found out it was all over. And I can't say it's specific to other counties, but I know here in Maricopa specifically, there was an abuse being done. So what this bill does, it basically says, you know what, you cannot tell someone they cannot allow an electioneer for any reason. It's our First Amendment right to do that. And we're there to protect our Constitution first and foremost. And so I was very passionate about it and decided I go, this is how we'll fix it. I'm a legislator. I'm going to craft a bill and we're going to fix this. And then, and anyone that's against it, they're going to shame on you. So here we are.
And Majority Leader Carbone, thank you for joining us. The time flies. It's always short. We've got those things called commercials that get in the way all the time, but it is part of our business. So I appreciate your leadership. I appreciate you joining us. And I hope that that you and the speaker will continue to make an occasional appearance on the Morning Voice.
Yeah, anytime, Max. Thank you for inviting me. Glad to come anytime.
It's been great to meet you and get to know you, and I really do appreciate the decorum you've brought back to the house.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you, sir. Listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be back after the break. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. 5 days, five different hosts, five different topics, and five different discussions. So today you have me and you have Matt Neely behind the glass. And this is the engagement hour. You know, we're a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and some responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and others to our community. We've spent a lot of time on this program talking about all the different ways you can serve. The most important thing is to find something that you're passionate about, get engaged, get knowledgeable, and then be heard. So this hour, I've got the honor of having Blake Eager with me, and Blake is the executive director of the Arizona Sports, Tourism, and Film Authority. And we'll get into that a little bit more in the show. But Blake, I appreciate you joining us today on The Voice, on The Morning Voice.
Well, thanks for having me, Ted. Yeah, I should honestly say the honor's mine. I mean, for everything you've done for our country and for our community, it is in the highest regard. Thank you for having me on. It's a freaking honor.
Well, I appreciate that, but I'm just a radio host today. So I get to ask the questions, hopefully, and then if this goes well, I'll just sit back and let you roll and take this over.
Can we talk real quick, though? How many Coda Monday attacks are there in the United States?
And he tore off a windshield wiper.
It's not just that. I've been seeing all that lately.
It's
With the different animals in Arizona, and you always lose when you learn something new. And I've been looking, Coda Monday? No. I mean, I think I saw the first video of one walking like 2 weeks ago, now we've already got this attack.
The killer Coda Monday. It's like a bad, low-budget B-movie that we could do through the Film Authority.
I'll jump on. There you go.
We could get that going.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how they got here. If they're now saying they're native, I'm sure we'll
can you get somebody on that project, Blake?
Yeah, I'll make some calls.
I think in the past I wasn't even sure what they look like, but now I know, and now I'm going to be on the lookout, at least for one. Unless he's finding me, then it's really bad news.
Sorry to throw off topic.
Wild, so. It's great. That's what this is supposed to be about. So we're going to be with Blake for about the next 45 minutes. So if anybody wants to call in and participate, 520-790-2040. Drive time radio. Sometimes when you're trapped in your car and trying to get through some traffic, you think, you know what? I got something to add. So please feel free. We'd love to get listeners involved on The Morning Voice. So like part of the engagement hour is to hear through people's stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go back and tell a lot of your story, but I prefer to have you tell it. What brought you to Southern Arizona? You know, were you born here? Did you move here? But more importantly, what's made you now get in a position where you want to be involved and really doing something for the community, for the region, and in a large part, giving back to this community?
No, that's an excellent question. So I'm born and raised here. I grew up across the street from Flowing Wells Junior High, went to Flowing Wells High School, and then from there I went to Eastern Arizona College in Safford and Thatcher, Arizona, actually Thatcher. I played 2 years of baseball there and then spent one summer in the Northwoods League, and then went on to University of Colorado Denver, which is actually Metro State University now, and played 2 years there, then got drafted by the New York Mets. So I kept coming back, right? So I played professional baseball. I was fortunate enough to do that. Then I went on to coach. I coached internationally. I coached the national team for Sweden, a junior national team for Sweden. And then I ended up coaching the national team for Russia. Came back, started some academies. Just very fortunate to be a part of the community. Now stepping back and looking at it, I look at the position that I was in, the neighborhood I grew up in, which I'm sure you're well aware of. It's one of the poor demographic areas and neighborhoods, and
but a very successful neighborhood.
You look at extremely successful schools,
Flowing Wells School District. It bats way above its average.
It's a phenomenal district. So going back to that, like the community that I was raised in was a true community. Everybody looked out for each other. Everybody tried to help each other out, and they wanted to uplift their community, right? So that sense of community really comes from where I was raised. Flowing Wells absolutely bats way above their average. They do a great job. I'm so very fortunate that I grew up there. I'm so happy to be a part of that. So when I came back from coaching and I had my companies and I ended up going to a meeting with Edgar Soto at Visit Tucson. Brent Derod was still there as the president. Shelley Duncan had brought me in. And for people that don't know Shelley Duncan is that family's on the Mount Rushmore for baseball in Southern Arizona.
And he can hit the golf ball a long way now.
Very frustrating to play golf with him, especially since he only picked it up, 5-6 years ago. So
of course.
But he's a great athlete. So he brought me into that meeting. There was a discussion there, and I love sports. Don't get me wrong. I love sports. But the thought process of being involved with something that had workforce development, film, tourism, a sense of community and development of six counties in Southern Arizona. And I always say Southern Arizona raised me. I went to Eastern Arizona. The coach from Cochise College gave me the opportunity to play in Northwood Summer League. Like, it took It took a full like effort in Southern Arizona to get me to the point where I was even successful. So the fact that I had a chance to get into a role that would be a give back role to the community on so many different levels was kind of my dream job. Yeah.
So I want to hit one question. Obviously, some later date we'll talk about your professional career, but what I'm curious about on your journey to get here, coaching baseball for the Swedish national team and the Russian national team.
Yeah.
Did when you showed up, were those athletes good, or was it a lot of training and coaching to get them to the point where they can play on the world level?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. So Sweden, I got this opportunity. I had labrum surgery, which essentially ended my career professionally.
What position did you play?
I was a starting pitcher.
Yep. That's not good for pitchers.
No. Labrum was, and you know, it sounds funny, but even back then it was still a tough recovery. Now it's maybe a little bit easier with science and development, especially training. So I had made friends with somebody that was in a part of MLB Europe, and I had reached out to him when I was going through my rehab, and he said there was this position open in Sweden for a local team that would come along with a junior national pitching coach spot. And I said, okay, yeah, I would love to take it. So I knew nothing about Sweden at all, right? I knew that I was at a point where I couldn't throw or pitch, but they, the Mets allowed me to go if I could get my rehab done over there. So we've got all the approval rate. We've got everything approved. So I end up going over there. It's funny. Sweden is like, I don't know, going to Iowa. You know, and I lived in Iowa for 2 summers where it's a little bit of a
different. Where do you live in Iowa?
Waterloo, where Northern Iowa is, university.
My wife graduated from UNI and
Mason
City.
UNI,
so.
Yeah. So I have like 2 summers, my best 2 summers of my life I was spent there. Yeah, I love Waterloo. So, and UNI is a great university.
And the summer's a good time to be in Iowa,
yeah,
for the record.
Great time, yeah. Don't want to be there ever again in the winter. I think I've been there once in the winter. The Midwest winter is a completely different winter to deal with. But so anyway, I got this opportunity. I went over there. Everybody speaks English. I mean, you're watching Seinfeld and it's like watching just American TV. So it was a great experience. They had everything you could possibly want from a food standpoint. Like, so that was great. Stayed over there for, I think, 7 summers. I kept going back. Built a little program and academy over there.
7 summers in Sweden.
7 summers in Sweden, wow. Which is not a bad place to live.
Okay, you really don't look anywhere near how old you might be, because that's a lot of time. 7 summers in Sweden.
Yeah, so I got to miss Tucson summers, and I got to spend it on a lake in Sweden at about 65 degrees average. So yeah, I had a terrible life for a while. And then, so Jerry Stitt, Coach Stitt, who another person that would be on the Mount Rushmore of baseball for Southern Arizona, was my mentor, and so I would see him often, talk to him probably on a weekly basis. When I was done in Sweden, he had called me and said, hey, would you have any interest in coaching with me for Team Russia? And I'm always open to, you know, I'm open to opportunities. So I said, yeah, absolutely. Well, something happened and Coach Stitt wasn't able to go about a month prior to before we were leaving, and he got Robbie Moen. So Robbie Moen and I grew up essentially like down the street from each other. He's a little bit older. We had never met each other. We had known of each other. So this was our first time. So he went to Walter Douglas. I went to Homer Davis. We both went to Flying Wells Junior High. I went to Flying Wells High School. Then he went to the U of A, ended up holding the hits record at the University of Arizona. So the first time I ever met him was in Moscow. Like, it was the wildest thing. But if you're talking about playing ability and the level of talent, Russia actually had a pretty strong level of talent, because if you know anything about communism or communist countries, and also Russia's not communist anymore, still athletically is kind of in that same mindset. If a sport is in the Olympics, there's a lot of money to develop that sport. So they actually developed a professional baseball league. These people literally got paid to play baseball, didn't have to work.
That's why for so many years they were one of the dominating forces,
yeah,
across all the Olympic,
absolutely,
games. And
yeah,
if baseball hadn't become an Olympic sport, it may not have gotten that attention. But, you know, now that they are a non-communist country,
yeah,
still a lot of communist mindsets, but a non-communist country, they're part of the World Baseball Classic and part of the world.
Yeah.
So you got over there, talented players. Well, how was the language barrier, and I was working with them.
Yeah, Russia's completely different. They don't speak any English. Like, it's not like people pick this up or they trans. So we had a 17-year-old translator. She was the sweetest thing ever. But she had no mindset of baseball, right? So she's trying.
She was a translator, Blake.
Yeah, and she's the coolest girl ever because she went on to like go on to university in different countries in seven. I think all six out of seven continents. She went to college somewhere. But so when she was translating what I was saying from a coaching standpoint, the players were like, "What the heck are you talking about?" Because she couldn't get what I was saying from a verbiage standpoint or a word standpoint. So luckily, there was a player on the team that had played with the Minnesota Twins, and he was linguistic, so he could translate what I was saying. So it actually ended up working out really well. But it was a great experience. Like, yeah. It was great. So
it tells you how much language and communication. And I don't know if we're worse as as Americans with it because we assume everybody understands English and slang. We use so many colloquial words inside of our language, we don't get it. But I think, I'm trying my hardest to learn Spanish. And mm-hmm. Every time I start talking, you can learn all the book stuff. It doesn't matter. Until you integrate and you really get there, it's another one. Well, I appreciate you sharing that story. Yeah. And when we get back to what I want to jump into initially is I want to talk specifically about the World Baseball Classic.
Absolutely.
And that event just ended here. If you missed it, Tucson was the host for one of the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. And I want to hear your takeaways from putting it on, successes, where we could get better. And more importantly, is there a future in the WBC for Tucson? So we'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Make sure you return and listen to us discuss the World Baseball Classic on The Morning Voice. Good morning and welcome back. I'm Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass, keeping us on time and target, as I like to say. And we've currently got Blake Eager with us. It is the executive director, right?
You nailed it.
Absolutely. That right. Yeah. Nowadays, executive director, president, CEO, what are all the different titles you can be? But the executive director of the Southern Arizona Sports
Tourism
and Film Authority. And I know workforce is in there, but I know it's not one of the letters in your name, but we'll get to that. We're going to take the last section. Blake will stay on us after the break and we'll talk about that. But what I want to talk about now, we talked about your baseball career, your story, coaching in Sweden, coaching in Russia. Kind of ironic. You coached in those two things and now you're back here working to make the World Baseball Classic part of our community. So we just had a qualifier. Can you talk about that, the challenges, the successes? I mean, you had some incredible games, and the funny part about it, there was four countries that aren't the United States of America, and they came in, and we had crowds, and we even had a couple Americans on the field that had dual citizenship. So
we did. Absolutely. So when we because we're a little bit, we're roughly 2 years into this, right, from the authority standpoint, from SAFSA standpoint. Our big goal in the sports arena was bring Major League Baseball back to Tucson. We hadn't had Major League Baseball here since roughly 2010. They did an event, one game, I believe, in 2013, but realistically have not been here since 2010. And we had a great relationship with Derek Hall and Ken Kendrick with the Diamondbacks, and they wanted to see an expansion into Southern Arizona. So we had gone down. It originally was going to be spring training, which we're still hoping for in 2026. We actually, I think we're going to go up to Phoenix in the next week or so to have an extended conversation about that.
You and the rest of the community. There are a lot of folks out there that are hoping you're successful on that front.
I think, Ted, you've probably been at quite a few of the meetings that I've spoken at, especially early on. No matter what I talked about, the first question at every speaking event I was at was, when are you bringing baseball back to Southern Arizona, right? Or to Tucson, for that matter. So we went down this whole route, and I'm not going to get into the spring training. It's still a very live idea. It's still something that we're going to accomplish at some point. And then so we went down the road with the relocation of a minor league team, very far down the road with that, to the point where I thought it was pretty much a done deal. And then we had this World Baseball Classic qualifier that we were working on in conjunction with all these other things. And so Jim Small, the president of World Baseball Classic, Nelson Gonzalez and Mickey Shupin, all intricate parts in bringing it out here, actually came out here and wanted to tour the facility. And I put together a dinner with a bunch of different leadership groups in town. And they like a lot of people, they fell in love with Tucson, right? They fell in love with the community aspect, and realistically, that's how we sold this, because we had to beat out cities like Orlando. We had to beat out Columbia, the country, and if you didn't notice, Columbia was in the qualifier, so that was a little bit more difficult than what we had expected. But it was so many entities working on this project together. You had the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, you had Mexican Baseball Fiesta, you had Visit Tucson, you had Pima County, you had Kino Sports Complex, you had SASFA, you had REA Advertising, you had C. Charo and Ray Flores. Like, everybody was at the table, almost every single conversation, to talk about how to get this done. We knew the importance of bringing back Major League Baseball. And so we executed that. We had signed the contract. I think we did our press conference November 12th of last year. We had signed the official contract November 10th. So it was like we had a drop dead date of November 10th, and it took till like the end of day EOD November 10th to get it signed. And then they flew out the 11th, and we had a press conference, and tickets went on sale. Now, you know, Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl has something called the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. They have a game in December. So we didn't have access to them once we signed that contract. Mexican Baseball Fiesta had just finished doing their games and their international series. So we didn't really have access to them. So we really didn't have access to a full team until, I want to say, January 8th, maybe, around there. So we turned this around in like 10 weeks.
And I think that's a great point to bring up is, you have a staff of two?
Me. It's just me.
Well, just you now.
Yeah, I mean, John Cassidy is my CFO, yeah. And I'm so glad.
Well, you need a CFO.
Paid staff, it's just me.
Just you.
Just me.
And so it was, you reached out to the Arizona Bowl and their staff and personnel and leveraged that. You reached out to the folks that put together Mexican. I mean, this was a community effort.
100%. Yeah.
But SAFSA and you specifically played a huge role, so thank you for doing that. Four countries come to play baseball in Arizona.
Yeah.
How did that go over with the fans and with the facilities, and how did it all work?
We have such a phenomenal relationship with Pima County and Kino Sports Complex. Sarah Horvath, the director of Kino Sports Complex, is a complete rock star. Like, literally, we would have never had this in our lives if it wasn't for her. She always finds a way to say yes, a turn a no into a yes. Her staff there is phenomenal. Everybody is just great at getting things done. Here's the big shout out I want to say for Pima County's standpoint. They put in well over $1 million into the facility to get it up to standards, right? So you had a brand new playing surface. You hadn't had that since 1998. They put in a video scoreboard that was there. They refurbished the dugouts. They refurbished the bullpens. They put all this money in there so it would be major league quality, which it is absolutely major league quality. It blew Major League Baseball away how well done the field and facility is. So we had Columbia, we had Germany, China, and Brazil come in, right? And you've got some big names. I mean, Colombia is absolutely loaded. All major league players are very high prospects. Brazil's got some very high prospects. Germany's, I mean, the name that stands out to everybody is Andre Agassi, and Steffi Graf's kid is on that team, which drew a lot of media attention. They were there at the games. Manny Ramirez was there at the games for Brazil. And then you had China, and China was kind of like an unknown. We didn't know what to expect. Great games. The attendance was good, right? First time out, it was good. It was also Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. So we went into it with the idea that we were going to bring back Kids in the Park. And Kids in the Park is, for people don't understand or people don't know what that is. So from a major league or a professional baseball standpoint, we would have getaway days. And usually getaway days are a day game after a night game. So it gives us a longer period to get on the road. Whether we're taking a bus or we're taking a flight, we want to get on the road. So I would usually pitch the night before, which would be like a 6:15 or a 7 o'clock game. You'd get done. And then if it was a good or bad game, I would probably enjoy myself after the game. So turning around like a 10:30 game where you've got 3,000 to 5,000 screaming kids in the park was not always great experience for me, but it's a great experience nonetheless for players and kids. So we had reached out to Matt Stamp in the superintendent's office, and Dustin has been phenomenal. So they worked with us. So literally in 6 weeks or 7 weeks, we turned our Kids in the Park days. We had over 6,000 kids attend those two games.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Yeah. From all school districts in Southern Arizona, it was great, and it just so happened that those games end up being played on MLB Network. So they were nationally, internationally televised games. It looked great on TV because we had an atmosphere of those kids being there. But a kid that grew up here, it was a chance for those kids to see professional baseball played in Tucson that you might not otherwise ever see again or had seen before. So attendance was good. The exposure that we got from an international standpoint was phenomenal. Economic impact, I think it's going to turn into a top three sporting event in Southern Arizona, which is great. For everybody involved. So I can only tell you what the reception that we received from Major League Baseball and the feedback that we got from World Baseball Classic back was that they 100% would do this again. They thought this was the best working relationship that they had. And they had never done anything like this with multiple agencies. And the fact that we were able to pull it off at such a high level that they were extremely impressed.
Well, that is good to hear. We've got about 50 seconds before we have to go to the bottom of the hour break. What was your favorite moment?
Oh, man. Probably watching Coach Stitt. Actually, you know what? It was the first game, throwing out the first pitch. And it wasn't because of me. I didn't want to do it in the first place. But having all our partners on the field, and my parents and my wife in the stands, was pretty incredible.
Oh, that's awesome. That's good to hear. Yeah. So that's the voice of Blake Eager, former professional baseball player, former coach of the Swedish and Russian national teams. We'll be back with him, and we'll hear what we can do to help them at the state legislature. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk on the Bustos Media Station. My guest this morning is Blake Eager. We've heard about his career in baseball and some of the adventures he's had. And he's currently the executive director of the Southern Arizona Sports, Tourism, and Film Authority. And I'm just a mouthful. I'll get it right. But we'll get it around. Yeah. But Blake, there's good sign on, we've been talking about the sports side, there's good sign on the film aspect of it. Matt says that there's several callers that want to come in and fund the Cudamundi series.
I think I got it on option for you, Blake.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
So he's already working. There's somebody that's already planning the second movie, which...
Seven Summers in Sweden, so... Yeah. That'll be the double feature.
Sweden's going to love to hear that Cudamundis are coming their way.
That's perfect. I love it.
It's going to be great.
It'll be the Sharknado of Cudamundi movies.
The Sharknado. Hey, we've got to put a stamp on that now and see how we make sure we get our cut. It happened right here.
So it's RIP, baby.
So before we go off the baseball thing, we were talking during the break, and Blake asked you, what's to you World Baseball Classics every 3 years? I didn't realize it was 3 years in between. Mm-hmm. But you said, that's okay. We got spring training next year. What is your idea of what spring training is going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's guaranteed at this point, but it's a project we've been working on for 4 years. The idea is to have 1 to 2 teams from Mexico from the summer league here that would be housed in Tucson, would play out at Keno Sports Complex. And you would have hopefully 5 to 6 teams from the Cactus League, if not more, come down and play 1 to 2 games down here or create a series down here. And then the teams from Mexico that are housed out of Tucson would go up to Maricopa County and play in the Cactus League. And so back and forth, so you create a partnership.
So realistically, I think you mentioned somewhere between 6 and 8. Hopefully we'll have 6 and 8 major league games. And I think as they show success, as we get people to turn out and enjoy a day at the ballpark, you know, my wife's a huge baseball fan. I've never seen her relax more than grabbing a beer and some peanuts and putting her feet up and watching baseball.
Yeah.
So hopefully we need to show up.
And that's a key point. You just said it, Ted. So the way we've pitched it is that Southern Arizona market is, you know, Pima County's 1.49 million, right? Mm-hmm. And then our surrounding communities, Pinal County is huge. It's continually growing very fast. Northern Mexico, Nogales, Sonora is roughly 330,000 people. Cochise County in Sierra Vista has about 130,000 people. You tie all that in, it's close to 2 million people right down here. That would be unbelievably successful if we could bring back professional sports, but they would also grasp onto a team.
Right.
And that's the big selling point is, listen, let's get them down here. Let's have some games. Let's create a partnership. But your fan base can be established, right? Especially for the Diamondbacks. You're a state team. Let's reestablish that fan base. And let's create some new blood from a youth standpoint on long-term sponsorship. Long-term fan bases.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I want to make sure we talk a little bit about the authority. And what people I don't think realize is you've become a one-man wrecking crew on collaboration and bringing people together because you are the only paid employee. And the authority itself was authorized and stood up by the state legislature. But funding is always an issue because they didn't give you a honeypot of gold and say, go make it happen. So what can this community do to support the continuation of this? And you've talked about it's sports right now, but there is tourism aspect, which comes along with the sports. And then there's the film piece of it. And we know that this has got potential in the region. And ultimately, that leads to workforce and job development. So what can we do to help you ensure the longevity of the authority?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a big thing when we talk about this is if we can have local support, but if everybody in our six counties, and that's Cochise, I'll start at the beginning, Pinal, Pima, Santa Cruz, Cochise, Greenlee, and Graham, and the tribal nations can reach out to their local elected officials and just let them know how much they support the authority would be phenomenal. And the things that we're doing is really having to bring communities together. You know, from a tourism standpoint, we have a monthly meeting on the first Friday, which is all six counties. So we have about 90 people on that invite, and it's representatives from chambers or DMOs, and we have an hour long conversation, right? And I usually have 1 to 2 guests. We've had everybody from the Roadrunners on that to professional the PBR to different things. So what we're working on right now is a mural trail in our six counties, similar to what Oregon has. That's our big goal this year. From a film standpoint, our sister bill was a film incentive bill that we worked on together jointly going through the House and the Senate. And thank God they both passed. Thank goodness, I should say, that they both passed. So now the state of Arizona has film incentives and workforce development. You're absolutely right. I mean, everything we're working on right now with the mining industry and film is to create more workforce, high quality paying jobs in our region so we don't continually lose our talent that have to go somewhere else, right? I think you probably know this better than anybody. University of Arizona or Pima College, when you graduate, or any of our community colleges in our region, we only retain roughly 30% of that talent in our region because we don't have the jobs to keep them here. If we can expand that workforce development program, we've got a much better chance of retaining.
Talent is one of the number one attractors of economic development. We've got to stop having our graduations at the airport.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got to keep the people here, and I think your sector, your authority, works on a lot of areas of interest. And film used to be a much bigger thing in Arizona. There's a lot of open space, a lot of environments. We can expand that. So I appreciate you working on that. Financially, are you secure? Do you feel insecure for at least one more year, maybe a couple?
Yeah. You'll have to ask me that question again. If you'll have me back on your show in like 3 to 4 months, I can probably answer that. So we were given essentially a stipend from our first time out, which was 2 years ago, to try to sustain us to where we would have a chance to go out to a vote because we are a taxing authority. So you're talking bid sale tax, you're talking car rental tax. We didn't feel comfortable about doing that in the current climate.
Now's probably not a good time, yeah, some people have learned.
Yeah, it's probably not a good time. So we are confident that we'll get maybe another stipend or another shot in the arm that will keep us alive and afloat for a year. Hopefully maybe a little bit longer than that.
Job security.
Job security. And, you know, I've played my whole life with not having job security.
That's a good point.
So I'm okay with being the person because I don't feel comfortable even if we could bring another employee into the fold at this point because I can't guarantee that they have a long-term success plan, right? And that's something that I think people should have, at least for the short term, is understanding that there's personal growth. But I'm okay being the kind of scapegoat when it comes to this. I'll figure it out on my own. I always have. You know, I will tell you this. The SASFA is extremely important for different levels, right? We're a state political subbody. We work in conjunction with all municipalities. We kind of cross the street very often on different topics. And I think we're the glue on a lot of different things, on creating partnerships that are sustainable for the long term. And it gets people looking as proactively instead of reactively, which you know this better than everybody and anybody else, Ted, is that this community for a very long time has been reactive. And I'm saying community from a Southern Arizona standpoint. We want to be reactive instead of saying, listen, who's doing something that we're not doing right now and that's successful? Is there a sports commission somewhere else that we're doing that's successful that maybe we could be a prototype? What's the film industry in New Mexico doing that maybe we could take a look at and do it on a smaller scale? If we can be proactive, it gives us a better chance for long-term success.
That's the voice of Blake Eager, and I'm going to let you, we're going to close it out there because you just nailed it. That is the message that you've given to this organization, and more importantly, to the community partners that you've helped develop around there. So if you're interested in learning more about the Sports, Tourism, and Film Authority, go to SASTFA.com. That's SASTFA.com. You can find all the information you need there about them. And Grant, Blake.
Yeah, you're good.
I was thanking Grant because I'm about ready to do an intro for Grant Krueger.
Yeah.
So, Blake, I appreciate you being with us today.
Hey, if I'm in the same breath as Grant, I'm in good shape.
Yeah,
Ted, thank you for everything you do for our community.
Absolutely.
I can't say that enough.
No, I enjoy it, and I appreciate that you're as passionate and engaged as many other people are in this community, and that's good to see. So speaking of Grant Krueger, tomorrow his guest on The Morning Voice will be, one of his guests will be John Slattery, who owns Desert Forager. It's an amazing company that uses foraged foods from the Sonoran Desert and turns them into amazing local products. Grant will tell you there's a lot of prickly pear project products out there, but none like John. So join Grant tomorrow on the Morning Voice. You know you're going to get a little food conversation. You're going to get some politics. We will be right back after the break with Stephen Levine with RJP Estate Planning. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and I'm honored to have with me today Stephen Levine from RJP Estate Planning. And if you own a home in Arizona or you have personal assets worth more than $75,000, if you do, Stephen from RJP Estate Planning is here to explain why you need to protect those assets so your children can actually inherit what you've worked so hard for. Stephen, thank you for joining us today. And first question out of the chute is, what happens if someone dies in Arizona without estate planning documents?
Hey, Ted, good morning. Thanks for having me back on.
Good morning.
Answer your question. It can turn into a long, expensive legal process. Sadly, we see it all the time. Here at RJP Estate Planning, grieving adult children walk in our office. They're lost, overwhelmed. Their last parent just passed away. They're trying to clean up the estate. Now they're stuck dealing with a big legal mess. So they come into us saying, hey, can we help them get their inheritance? For families that their parents were RJP estate planning clients, it's a lot easier to help them right away. As part of the RJP settlement support that we offer, that's our job to kind of help personally guide the kids through the inheritance process, the grieving process. They're not left struggling. Unfortunately, families that the parents were not clients of ours or did not have the proper estate planning documents, you know, all we can really do is offer comfort, but we can't help them get their inheritance. Instead, they're forced to go through a probate process here in Arizona. And when we check our records and find no estate plan, we ask the surviving children if their parents, you know, had a plan. Do they have a trust, anything? Most of the time, they're either not sure if they have a plan that even exists, or they say, you know, my parents talked about it, but never did anything. So surviving children will often bring in a parent's will or death certificate, but the heartbreaking part is a will has to go through probate. So even if your parents have a will, they still could take months or even a year for that probate process. So usually we see the family members in shock or confused or angry. We tell them probate court is their only option to claim their parents' home or other assets. If all you have is a will, especially here in Arizona, or even nothing at all, the burden of the estate falls on the people you love, you know, your kids. So it's really important. We always say if you own a home or have more than 75 grand in personal assets, your family could be tied up in probate court. That $75,000 in assets, that includes your bank accounts, your investments like 401ks, IRAs, CDs, any other type of financial account. And, you know, the tragic part is if people knew that while they were alive, they would have created a living trust. And the living trust could protect the family from all of this. The problem is once you pass away, you can't learn from your mistakes. So the kids ultimately are left to clean up that mess. So probate court, it can get nasty. It can drag on for a year or longer. And while your loved ones are waiting for that probate, they're going to have to, or somebody's going to have to pay for your home mortgage, cover property taxes, keep up with your homeowner's insurance, which the probate court requires. And your loved ones could be coming out of their own pocket to cover these expenses, including upfront fees for probate, which could really cut deep into the inheritance. So the financial burden is only a part of it. The time your family spends on the settlement could disrupt the family's lives. Because during the probate process, somebody's going to have to create an inventory, the court is, of your assets, notify creditors, publish a legal notice so that creditors can make claims against their estate. And the family's going to have to pay off those debts and taxes before any penny of the inheritance is distributed. So by the time probate's over, loved ones are left with far less than what you intended to leave them. And like I said, if parents knew about this, they would do everything in their power to prevent this. Because, you know, as a parent, I'm a parent, protecting my kids is, you know, the most important thing. So to kind of wrap it all up, the simple solution is create a living trust before it's too late. So give us a call to RJP Estate Planning, and we offer help for Arizona families to do this affordable. We offer a free consultation to review your assets, explain how to protect them. So unlike many estate planning firms, we don't charge hourly fees. Instead, we find out what you need during that free consultation, give you a clear, affordable one-time fee. And as part of that fee is using RJP's exclusive services. It's, to me, the most important one is that settlement support. So when a family does walk in, we really hold their hand and guide them through that process and really try to avoid probate. So if you're over 60, we're offering a 65% discount on a living trust, which I'll further explain in a sec.
Stephen, that's great and appreciate the insight. But do you have any real stories about what families had to go through when their parents passed away without a living trust?
Yeah, I have probably a million stories. So, you know, let me think. One, you know, recently we had three adult siblings walk in the office. They lost their mother. She had a will, did not have a trust. The will clearly stated that each of her three kids are going to get an equal split of the estate. Because she only had a will, her estate had to go through probate. That's when, you know, the nightmare began. The probate process took over 2 years because the three kids couldn't agree on the value of the mom's estate. And legal fees drained nearly probably about a quarter of the inheritance. And the worst part is one of the siblings, who was the executor of the will, was in charge of managing the mom's estate. But the other two siblings accused the sister of mismanaging. So she had to hire a lawyer to defend herself. That drained even more money. By the time probate court was settled, the siblings obviously got a lot less than what their mom intended for them to get. The worst part out of all this, you know, money aside, assets aside, now the three kids stopped talking. So the one sister is sort of cut out of the family. They're not doing vacations together. Who knows what they'll ever, you know, mend that relationship. But it really kind of threw them all through the grinder, especially when arguments, money's involved. The good thing about having a trust is it takes the emotion out. You know, you basically say, this is the rule. It avoids probate. We can sit with the family, you know, and just say, hey, these are the facts. This is what you get, and it eliminates any argument.
Well, Stephen, I think no parent wants their children to go through that. It's got to be heartbreaking. But as you said earlier, once you're gone, you can't fix your mistake. And since you don't feel the consequences yourself, it's really probably easy to put off creating a living trust.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And so that's why RJP Estate Planning is here to really make sure you protect everything that matters the most. And since 1995, RJP's helped more than 40,000 families here in Arizona to avoid probate and protect their loved ones. So like I said, anybody listening who's over the age of 60 will make it extremely easy to get your estate plan in order. Give us a call. We're offering a 65% discount on a living trust. You'll get a free 1-hour consultation to review your assets and leave with a clear plan in process. So with no obligation, most importantly, I'd say get a peace of mind. So a lot of people, they leave the office and they just feel like there's a huge weight off their chest. They have a trust. They feel like somebody else is here to kind of guide them and hold their hand as their estate planners. So give us a call. We're meeting with clients right now. We're filling up spots. So give us a call by Thursday, the 27th. So in 2 days, by 4 o'clock, to get that discount and get on the calendar. So 520-441-4523. Get scheduled for that free consultation by this Thursday afternoon. We'll get you in, in the next week or two to get that discount. So give us a call, 520-441-4523.
Stephen, thank you for sharing these insights. For our listeners, if you do own a home or you have $75,000 in assets, please don't put this off. And if you're 60 or over, call 520-441-4523 by 4 p.m. this Thursday to lock in your 65% savings on a living trust with RJP Estate Planning. So call now, 520-441-4523. Stephen, as always, thank you for coming on and sharing those valuable insights and trying to help out those so that their children don't have to deal with it in the future.
Of course, Ted. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Well, Matt, that's bringing us to the end of the show. I do want to point out that next week on the Morning Voice Tuesday edition, or the Engagement Hour, we'll have Ryan Harper coming on. Ryan's been engaged politically in advocacy for hospitals and different healthcare organizations. We're going to have a good time conversation in the morning about what's going on and the potential impact should there be cuts to Medicaid. And then we'll be bringing in Chris and Corbin Edwards to 8 o'clock Engagement Hour. Tucson Appliance is incredibly involved in the community. Chris and his son are often out in front of the public eye. I mean, if anybody knows Chris Edwards, you saw him with purple hair for about the last year.
To promote the Heartball.
As he was the chair
for
the Heartball.
Conversation opener, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's still got a little of that purple in his hair.
Still
but
it's out, huh?
It's starting to fade out as he, has kept it that way for a long time to do a good cause. But they're really engaged in the community. So that will be a good pair of interviews for the Engagement Hour.
Fantastic. And a great show today. If you want to hear, I loved how State Representative, the Majority Leader Carbone, talked about, previewed some of the highlights of the legislative agenda coming up, especially the modular nuke plants. That's just, he's singing my tune there. And then a great conversation with Blake Eager, kind of a recap of the World Baseball Championship.
Yes, please. You can always find any of the podcasts for the Morning Voice on the website, kvoi.com. And I hope everybody has a great week. And Matt, I look forward to seeing you next week.
Tune in every morning. Yep. And Grant coming up tomorrow. Kathleen Wynn coming up with Wynn Tucson right around the corner.
Everybody have a great day and a great week.